thank you very much for having me here. Sorry that I cannot be there. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to travel right now. So yes, I will be talking about balance laws as test of gravity. And so this is basically based on this recent paper, which is a pedagogical introduction into this subject. So if you want to know a little bit more, feel free to have a look there. I will try to give the main messages from there. Okay, so as you all know, when we talk about gravitational waves, gravitational waveforms, the protagonists are the black holes. So,
ich konnte diesen Titel nicht in deiner Apple Music Mediathek finden. Sorry, du kannst mich bitten, einen Radiosender zu spielen oder Musik von einer anderen App wiederzugeben.
I hope you don't hear Siri, but it's interrupting me. So, what is a black hole? A black hole is a region of space-time where gravity is so strong that not even light can escape. And it's a prediction of general relativity. And so the Schwarzschild black hole is a vacuum solution of Einstein's fit equations, which basically correspond to an isolated system without any cosmological constant, spherically symmetric space-time, and static space-time. So to derive the Schwarzschild solution, we impose that our space-time is stationary, so time translational invariant, and that is also invariant under rotation. And with this, we can then restrict the form of our metric, which has this very specific form, and the components of the metric have only R radius dependence. And then we can now take this, plug in into Einstein's vacuum Einstein's field equations, and then get the solution. In order to find the solution, we also have to impose certain conditions. First of all, for example, we will assume that space-time is asymptotically Minkowski, that is resembling the Minkowski metric. And another condition is outside the source, we would like to recover the Newton's laws. And so by imposing this condition, we obtain then the Schwarzschild solution. These boundary conditions do not completely fix the solution. We still have some gauge freedom. And so different gauge choices might lead to different looking solutions. For example, in the Schwarzschild gauge, the metric might look like this. In another gauge, it might have a slightly different look. But the solution, even though if they look different, they are physically completely equivalent. They agree on all physical predictions, such as gravitational radiation, a redshift, bending of light, existence of event horizon, and so on. So another very important theorem in gravitational wave physics is the Birkhoff theorem, which basically states that any spherically symmetric solution of Einstein's vacuum field equations is necessarily the Schwarzschild solution. In particular, it is static. And this has huge implication for gravitational wave physics. So basically, any spherically symmetric pulsating stars will not emit gravitational waves. And this fact also follows from the quadrupole formula. Okay, when we look at this type of stationary black hole solutions, you can basically have four types. If the black hole just has a mass, you have the Schwarzschild solution. If this black hole is also charged, then you will have Reisner-Nordström solutions. Imagine if the black hole rotates with an angular momentum J, then you have Kerr's solution. And if the black hole has all of them, has mass, charge, and rotation, then you have Kerr-Newman solution. That brings me to another important theorem in gravitational wave physics, which is the No-Hare theorem. And it states that all stationary black hole solutions of the Einstein field equations coupled to the standard model matter are completely characterized by only three externally measurable parameters, the mass, the charge, and the angular momentum. So therefore, it's very important to look at black holes merger. So when two black holes merge, the system is highly non-spherical, symmetric, and non-stationary. So the no hair theorem is broken. And so when two black holes merge, they can then emit a gravitational wave signal. And we have the chance to measure the signal and extract very important informations. So when there are these two black holes and they come closer and closer, and at some point they merge, as you can see, this system is highly not spherically symmetric and is definitely not stationary. So it really sends a gravitational wave signal all the time, and we can measure that. And based on the sent gravitational wave signal, we can then extract very important information. So what are gravitational waves? So gravitational waves are ripples of space-time, and they give rise to changes in lengths and shapes. But there's this measurement challenge because the changes in the lengths are super duper tiny. Here, as you can see, is like 10 to minus 18 meters. But nevertheless, we manage after a very long time to measure exactly such tiny small changes in lengths and shapes. So now I would like to address some very crucial questions about gravitational waves. So first of all, how do we extract information about the masses of the binary system? We have seen there are these two objects, but what are their masses? And how do we know the distance and location in the sky of this binary system? How do we determine the total power emitted from that system? And how can we test different theories of gravity? So it could be general relativity or maybe some other different theory. And the signal will carry this information. It will be embedded in it. So how can I test the theory of gravity? And all the solutions or answers to these questions are in the gravitational waveforms. So our task will be to come up with models that mimics how these wiggles look like. So to come up really with a waveform, and then from that waveform, we will try to extract all this information. And sorry, there was supposed to be a small video. So as you can see, depending on what the ingredients are in this binary system, you know, how small they are and how far they are, these wiggles, these waveforms look very different, right? And so it's all about really measuring these wiggles, this waveform. And based on how its form looks like, we can then deduce about the involved masses, positions, the spins, all the important relevant physical information. So, for example, if you have such a waveform, then from the frequency evolution, one can infer the involved masses of the binary. From the amplitude and the masses, you can infer the distance. From the time of arrival, amplitude and phase at the detectors, you can infer the sky location and so on. And also, as I said, the information about the gravity theory is also embedded in this wiggle. And so depending on the theory, for example, in general relativity, we know there are two polarizations. We can obtain the information in these different channels of the polarizations. In GR, we know we have the H plus and H cross polarizations. And now if you have, let's say, a ring of test masses and there is such a gravitational waves that pass, it will have influence on this test masses. And then the test masses will move around, and we can then really measure from that the strain of these polarizations. If you had a very generic metric-based theory of gravity, in principle, you could have more than two polarizations. You could have six polarizations, two tensorial, two scalar, and two vectorial. But as I said, in standard general relativity, we only have these two polarizations. and we would be looking at the signal coming from these two polarizations. Okay, so how do we get these wiggles, this waveform? In order to get that, we need to solve Einstein's field equations. This very nice but very complicated equations, and it's really very hard to solve these equations for such a complicated system. So in order to do that, we therefore put basically or separate this entire merger event into three phases. The first one is the inspiraling phase, when the two objects are sufficiently far away. And there we can use perturbation theory and post-Newtonian approximation in order to get our exact waveform. But once these objects come too close, our analytical perturbative ansatz doesn't work anymore, and we need to really do numerical relativity. And then finally, once they merge in the final phase, the ring down phase, we can again use perturbation theory. And so now the task is done to put these three phases together, glue them together in a hopefully sophisticated way without making any mistakes or too much of error. So these three phases, as I said, require different approximation techniques. So for example, post-Newtonian approximation for the inspired phase, then numerical relativity for the highly nonlinear merger phase, and again, perturbation theory for the ring down phase. And to get the full waveform, it's necessary to combine these approximated phases together into a so-called waveform model. So for your waveform model, you really need to take these three phases and put them together. All right, and there are many different waveform models, and this is now not a really an exhaustive list, but typical waveforms that you might see appearing are SXS waveform models, surrogate models, effective one-body models, some phenom models, and so on. So if your favorite model is not in this list, please apologize. As I said, this is not very exhaustive. So I don't want to discuss about all these different models, but what I want to say is what are the common and distinguishing properties among these models. So first of all, waveform models are really essential tools for detecting gravitational waves and for parameter estimation of coalescing binary systems. And each model depends on typically 10 intrinsic parameters and 4 extrinsic parameters. So for example, concerning the intrinsic parameters, this is typically the two masses of the constituents, then the individual spins, the eccentricity of the orbit, the orientation of the orbit. Then you have some extrinsic parameters like the luminosity distance from the source and the three parameters determining the orientation, and so on. And each model makes simplifying assumptions regarding the real physics, the involved physics. So just to give an example, the effective one-body models typically assume a small mass ratio of the binary. And many of the older waveform models, for example, they completely neglected the gravitational wave memory effect. This is something that I will discuss quickly towards the end of the talk. But so sometimes these models even lack very important physics of the merger and of the gravitational physics involved. And also another very important point is each model needs input from numerical relativity for the merger phase. But we know that numerical relativity simulations are really very expensive, and therefore they can only cover very finitely many points in the parameter space. And in between this finite parameter space, you have to then interpolate to get information out of that. So each approximate technique introduces errors, and these errors can propagate through the waveform. And so given that waveforms are really very essential, crucial in both detecting the gravitational wave and extracting information from that signal, we really have to ask the following crucial questions. So which of the many models can we trust when we're analyzing observational data? And which model is closest to what full nonlinear GR would predict for the physics of the compact binary coalescence? And can we test which model makes the smallest error and provides the best approximation? And the answer to all this question is a big yes. Yes, we can do all that when we use the so-called balance laws. So understanding how gravitational waves are described in the full nonlinear general relativity opens the possibility to develop exact mathematical tests. So these are really exact statements for waveform models using these balance laws. This is based basically on this pioneering work here by these people. If you want to know more about it, you can have a look at this paper. So the idea behind the balance laws is really very simple. So if you have a binary system and it emits gravitational wave, it loses energy through the emission of gravitational waves. And the total energy loss has to be balanced by the total energy carried by the gravitational waves. So this balancing of energy allows us then to test and compare different waveform models. So before I jump into the GR case, which is rather very complicated, let me start with the easy mechanical balance laws. If you want to see more detail about this example, you can have a look here. So let's imagine we have a dissipative mechanical system here. These two objects, it could be two balls or whatever, with a boundary around this system. And now imagine there is an energy flux into the system through the boundary and some energy outflux going out of the system through the boundary. So the energy is, of course, not conserved, but nevertheless, this total in-out flux of energy has to be balanced by the total gain loss of the energy in the system. So imagine we measure the energy of the system at some initial time and at final time. And the measurements gives us these values for the initial time and final time. Then one can prove that the energy gain and loss in the system, the left-hand side, is balanced or given by this integral here, which is basically a time integral over the time derivative of a Lagrangian. The Lagrangian of this system. And this is exactly the energy in and out flux through the boundary. So on the left-hand side, we have the total energy gain loss of the system. And on the right-hand side, we have the total energy in out flux through the boundary of the system. And they have to balance out each other. And so this total in-out flux is measured then by this integral over time derivative of the Lagrangian. So this mathematical law basically allows us to test approximate solutions to complicated equations of motion. So this strategy is as follows. Derive your equations of motion from a given Lagrangian. Make simplifying assumptions, approximate equations, solve them numerically if necessary, but you have a concrete, maybe approximative solution. Then plug this approximate solution into your unapproximated, unsimplified, completely exact mathematical balance laws, and then see how good is your approximate solution is doing. So the better the balance laws are satisfied, the better the approximate solution describes your full physical situation. So let me consider an example, a ball rolling down a half pipe with friction. You will assume that this ball is just a point particle and there is no air resistance. And so the equations of motion are already highly nonlinear. So the equations of the system are given by this. And as you can see, there's a friction term, but what is relevant for us is there is this nonlinear term, which makes that these equations are highly complicated and nonlinear, and solving them are cumbersome. And therefore, we could now make an approximation for small angle, and then we can basically replace the nonlinear dependence by a linear dependence for small angle approximation. And now
Lavinia, you have 10 minutes left.
Is easy to solve. And as you can see, this approximate solution describes quite nicely the system. And you can even solve it analytically very easily. As you can see, it depends on some parameters, mu, omega zero, and et cetera. And now you ask yourself the question, how well this solution describes actually my physical system. So the approximate solution, as I said, seems to describe the physics accurately, but how good is the approximation? So we plug this approximate solution in the unapproximated, completely mathematical, exact balance laws, and then we can plot and see what is the difference. So here is the plot. And as you can see, in green is basically the left-hand side of the balance law divided by the right-hand side of the balance laws for some fixed values of the parameters of your system. And as you can see, for small angles, left and right-hand side are balanced well against each other. And later on, of course, this is not the case. This is exactly what you would actually expect, right? That for small angles, your small angle approximation should work well. You could also now change some of your parameter values, for example, omega zero here. And then you see that this approximation is still good, but worse at this point in parameter space. So now I would like to move on from mechanical to GR balance laws. But the strategy is exactly the same thing. So we can apply the same idea to general relativity and then use that to compare and improve waveform models and determine which model performs better in which region of parameter space. So recall that the balance laws are exact mathematical relations of your theory without any approximations. And to develop balanced laws for coalescing binary systems, we need to understand gravitational waves in the full nonlinear general relativity. So if you want to have a detailed introduction into the subject, both detailed and pedagogical, feel free to have a look at this notes or book or whatever. So it needs quite some steps and mathematical rigorousy in order to get the balanced laws for GR compared to the very simple mechanical system. And here I can maybe just tell you that what the setup is. So we consider a binary system of these compact astrophysical objects. And we choose our coordinate system here such that in the distant past, the observer is at rest relative to the center of mass of the system. And due to the emission of gravitational wave, there is an outflux of energy. The gravitational waves carries energy from the system. And so the signal is then measured by interferometers, which are infinitely far away from the source. And the signal allows us to determine physical quantities like the kick velocity or the total mass of the binary system or the mass of the remnant, the final object, and so on. So when you do that and you follow that, this is the exact form of the balance laws for general relativity. And you can already see a close resemblance with the mechanical balance laws that we had. So on the left-hand side, we have the energy difference between initial and final state of the system. And on the right-hand side, we have the total energy lost by the system. And here in the case of general relativity, as you can see, we have another third part contribution. This is a new phenomenon. And this is the gravitational wave memory, which also appears in your balance laws, which we didn't have in our simple mechanical system. So this memory term is basically essentially the difference of two values, namely the h plus h cross in the distant future minus h plus h cross in the distant past. As you can see, is the difference between them. And in the distant past, before any gravitational waves has been emitted, one aspect that your signal, your strain is zero. And similarly, in the distant future, after the gravitational wave has long passed, one would expect that the strain or the signal is zero. And therefore, naively, you would expect that this should give you zero. However, general relativity predicts that the polarizations in the distant past and in the distant future can differ from each other, and that this contribution is actually non-zero. So this difference has a clear interpretation in terms of a ring of test masses. So for example, a gravitational wave sets a ring of test masses into oscillatory motion, and the proper distance between the test masses is a function of this strain h plus h cross. And after the wave has passed, one expects that this h plus and h cross would be zero, and therefore the original ring configuration should be restored. But as I said, however, general relativity predicts that this is not the case, and so the original ring configuration is not restored. And this means that the proper distance between test masses is permanently changed. So it means that the shape is permanently changed, and the gravitational wave memory effect is a prediction that gravitational waves leads to a permanent displacement of test masses. Here is an example. So if you have this test mass and there is a gravitational wave passes, as you can see, it gives rise to permanent displacement changes, which you can also see in your waveform model. Okay, let me give you a simple waveform model based on this nice article here. It's supposed to be a very simple waveform model, which is completely analytical. We assume for this model that you have two objects with masses m1 and m2, zero initial spin, orbiting each other with time-dependent separation r, with time-dependent orbital frequency omega. And then you can first start with the inspiring phase. This is, for example, the analytical expression, how the inspiring phase, the two signals, h plus h cross, could look like. As you can see, it depends on the phase, on the radial distance, on the total mass m, and luminosity distance in this very specific way. And then for the merger, in this one paper, they basically assume such an ansatz for the strain with an amplitude and phase. And these two functions are determined by a numerical fit to numerical simulations. So their exact form, you can find it in the paper. They depend on a very non-trivial way on this fitting functions and some parameters. And so if you now take the inspiral and merger ring down waveforms and you match them and you merge them into a single analytical waveform, this is what you get for the two polarizations. So it was actually quite fun to play with it and get my hands dirty and to appreciate actually how difficult it is to make this process work. And now we would like to know whether this approximated simple waveform model is performing well. So we apply the balance laws. On the right, left-hand side, this simplifies just to the case, to the energy loss between the mass of the initial mass, basically, and the final mass, because the kick velocity is zero in this very simple model. And also, there's no memory in this very simple model. And so we already know it's lacking very important physical physics. And but the balanced load stand simplifies to this very simple form. Then we can compute basically what the right-hand side is. And then when you do that, you see that you get something like around 5 solar masses. And then you can also evaluate the left-hand side. Sorry. And there you obtain the difference in form of 3 solar masses. This is for the first ever measured event from LIGO. So we have used the parameters coming from that event. And as you can see, there's a huge mismatch between the left-hand side and right-hand side because a lot of physical effects are missing. And this is supposed to be a very simple model. So in this way, you can quantitatively really say how good a waveform model is. Okay, so a summary: using balanced loads, we can compare and improve waveform models, and we can determine which model performs better in which region of parameter space. And hopefully this will then allow us to come closer to what waveform models we should be using. All right. Thank you very much. And I stop here. And if you have questions, feel free to ask.
Yeah, thank you very much. So we have a couple of minutes of questions for questions. So Abhay, please.
Yeah. So this is Abhay Ashtekar. So I want to thank you for taking up work and, you know, first of all, writing this review, which actually made it available to many people, and also the way that you present it, it sort of makes it accessible to a lot of people. I just wanted to add a couple of comments. The first is that, in fact, there is a whole slew of papers that followed the one that you showed us, particularly with Badri Krishnan, who is deep into the data analysis and so on. And indeed, we actually checked and pointed out found the in specific events, the limitations of the waveform models, even in the very first one, you know, the EOB there, the way it was used was not very good. So, but the main point is that up to now, it is very surprising that the waveform models are performing quite well. I mean, you know, in other words, that the error in the waveform models is much smaller than the experimental error. But the coming generation of detectors is going to, you know, going to really reduce the errors very much. And the kind of effects that you have discussed up here are and also the errors that we have found, those are going to be really important. And that's why people are working on improving these waveform models for the not only for the, you know, Einstein telescope and Cosmic Explorer, but even for advanced LIGO. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes, you're absolutely right. This is like, because, you know, we want to become more and more precise and take more and more complicated information into it. I don't know, eccentricity, spins and memory effect and so on. And then, but then we need also waveform models, which are more and more and more and more accurate. Maybe right now there is not so much pressure, but as you said, in the future, they really have to improve.
Okay, more questions. I think there's a question online, right?
Yeah, I think Liz Molin has a question, and I see that you're already muted. Do you want to ask it?
Yes, you can hear me?
Yes.
Yes, can you use these methods to test generic properties of modified gravity theories, for example, time reversal invariance or parity?
Yeah, so this is a very excellent question. So this was all based on GR, right? And all the waveform models that I have that I listed are based on GR, and also this balanced loads, the form that you saw, they were derived for general relativity. So if you now want to take a modified gravity theory, you really need to do all the work from scratch and compute exactly this mathematical nonlinear balanced loads for your very specific modified gravity theory, and then come up with the waveform models, you know, like the three phases that we were showing for this specific modified gravity theory, and then you compare it to data. So another way what you could do is you take your data, the signal, you plug this strain directly into your GR balance loss, and then you see it doesn't match it. So it could be a small indication that maybe GR is not the right theory, but then you still don't know how the balance loss need to look like in that specific modified gravity theory. So you would need to work that out.
Right. Can you test some modified gravity theories have a speed of light the same as the gravitational speed, the speed of gravitational waves, and some are different? Do you test directly for that kind of property?
So, yeah, you see, in order to get to this waveform model that we had, to this very specific form of the balance loss here, this year, you know, there are several steps in order to get exactly this equation here, this equality. And one of the important steps is that it uses the equations of general relativity, the equations of motion. And basically it takes then the Weyl tensor of the equations of motion and conformally completes it. And all these steps, of course, would be then completely different if your equations of motion are not the one from GR, but from this slightly modified theory that you are considering.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we have to move on, so let's thank Lavinia again.
Thank you.